change. They want me to change, but I ain't changing. Nah. I remain the same.
And you have now tuned in to another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerd DJs Radio Network. Y'all already know, man, I only rock with legends over here. I say it every week, and it's always fucking true. And today is absolutely no exception. Yo, we got Stellar Award winner. I'm sorry. Let me make sure I got this, because the resume is so big, I couldn't remember this shit. My man's has been killing the game since he was 12. He's been nominated and won a Stellar Award, Grammy Award nomination, an NAACP Image Award as a musician and producer. And I'm reading off his website because I couldn't write all this shit down because I'm lazy. He's worked a lot alongside artists such as Pharrell Monch, Bobby Creekwater, Jadakiss, Dr. Dre, Jasmine Sullivan, Alchemist, Xzibit, J Electronica. And I'm sure J Electronica disappeared on him at some point. I'm just fucking with you, bro. Yo, man, welcome to the conversation, man. The incomparable Brandon Williams. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing fantastic, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, man.
That's funny, man. J Electronica, man. It's so funny that you say that he disappeared on me at some point.
Yo, you know Oba?
Man, look, Jay just disappeared on me 2 weeks ago, literally. like I was on Instagram, we was chopping it up. You know, like, he switches phone numbers every week. So I never know how to get a hold to him by phone. And, you know, so we kick it on Instagram. He'll hit me up. We'll be on live, you know, I mean, not on live, but, you know, just on the video for 2 or 3 hours, kicking it, working on some music. And, you know, he hit me a couple weeks ago, man, and sent me about 20 or 30 DMs in a row. And I reached back out to him, and literally he disappeared until last week. that's what he does, man. You know, and that's been my brother for a long, long, long time. I've been knowing him since I was like 21. So, you know, that's my guy, man. We've been knowing each other, 20-something years.
Yeah, your man is Houdini in the flesh, man. Houdini.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think Ober Roland was telling me how he disappeared on Big Sean multiple times.
It's not that, look, if anybody say that, I believe it. I believe it.
What's it like, man, having just all the accolades, the talent, the drive? Like, what's that like, bro?
Hey, man, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, for me, it's just life. You know, I just go through every day, you know, moving how I move. You know, the accolades are what they are, and it's cool. You know, and people like to talk about that, and it's something that I personally really don't like to talk about. You know, sometimes you do have to pull the thing out and say, hey, I did this, or hey, I did that, or I worked with this person, just to show people who you are, you know, what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't really like to talk about that stuff a whole lot, man. It's, you know, it's just things that happen. You know, the Grammy thing, it was something that happened, you know, some years back. You know, and I'm grateful for all of it. You know, the Grammy thing and the Stellar and all, you know, all that stuff, I'm grateful for it. You know, so I'm not discounting or really downplaying it. But, you know, I just like to keep it moving and, you know, and just work on whatever's next, man.
I say, you've got a resume that's damn near unrivaled. What's your favorite thing about the conversations you're able to have?
Oh, man. My favorite thing about the conversations? You know what? I'm an avid reader and an avid learner. So I guess it would really just be learning from, you know, whoever I'm in the room with. You know, whether it's Dr. Dre or Pharrell Monch or Anita Baker or, you know, or whoever. You know, I'm always about learning and looking to learn more about, you know, more about the craft and whatever I'm doing.
How you meet Michael J. Powell?
Oh, you know what? I don't remember. No. I do know how I met Mike. I was performing at this venue called Lola's downtown Detroit, in the Harmony Park area. And there was a studio, that was named after the area. It's called Harmony Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike used to work upstairs So Lola's was downstairs and Harmony Park was up, you know, upstairs from that.
Okay.
And Mike used to just come in and out. And I used to see him, and I'll never forget, you know, the first time I saw him, I'm like, yo, that's Mike Powell. And I'm, you know, I don't know if I'm sitting there performing. I don't know what I was doing at the time. But, you know, I'm like, yo, that's Mike. So I went upstairs one day to the studio with my partner, Quentin, and was introduced to Mike. And Mike kind of took me up under his wing. And I've been doing music, you know, a little bit at that point, but nothing like what I was doing after I got to working with him. You know, working with him, we got to work with Aretha and Anita and Aaliyah Adams and, you know, all of these different people. And, but yeah, Mike, he was, you know, he's a great mentor, man. Great guy. Yeah. But that's how we initially met.
What did you learn from him that you teach to others?
Basically how to complete records. Before Mike, I was more of a beat maker, you know, because, and this is me, I've always listened to, you know, Anita Baker and Freddie Jackson and Johnny Gill and Jodeci. I mean, all of the, you know, all of the stuff, right? But I was more into making beats, you know, on my MPC and that kind of thing, but I didn't know how to complete a song. So really sitting up under Mike taught me how to complete, you know, how to complete songs, how to go through the transitions, you know, from the verse to the bridge to the chorus. And of course I heard this stuff, you know, early on, but I don't know what it was about the music at the time where I wasn't able to do that. But I was also working with Dr. Dre real heavy and Denine Porter, you know, and all of these guys. So, you know, I was just really into the beat making thing versus like the actual, you know, crafting of a song, you know, and not to say that beats can't turn into songs, because I also worked with Dilla and that was a whole thing. But yeah, it was really just crafting, you know, crafting songs. That's what I learned from Mike.
So wait a minute, Dr. Dre and Dilla.
Yeah.
Mike J. Powell. Production wise, who else? I know you met Teddy Riley and got cool with him. Did y'all work together?
So me and Teddy started working on something right before the pandemic, and the pandemic shut that whole thing down. But, you know, but I'm always, you know, picking Teddy's brain, reaching out to him, calling, texting, you know, and just trying to stay in touch. But yeah, Teddy, he's a great guy, man. But he's also, I mean, he's one of my absolute favorite producers. And then, of course, you got Jam and Lewis, you know, who produced, you know, some of the biggest stuff ever. We got Babyface, some cats who don't get mentioned a lot, the Vanelli Brothers. And, you know, they were doing a lot of stuff back in the late 70s, early 80s. Gino Vanelli, Joe Vanelli, Ross Vanelli. And those are like my guys. The Gibb Brothers, you know, so we got, you know, the BGs.
Those dudes, bruh.
Oh, like my God. The
niggas don't get the BGs, the credit from people. Oh, my God.
Yeah, people don't get a BG the credit that they were, you know, as songwriter or that they're due as songwriters and also producers, man. You know, so the Vanelli Brothers, you know, is kind of one people may not expect me to say.
I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, but you know, the Gibb Brothers, man, they were killing back in the day. Nile Rodgers, you know, is another one.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, Nile Rodgers is, you know, he's one of the greatest ever, and he's been, you know, doing this since, you know, 74, 73, and, you know, still up to these days, he's still very, very current, you know, and doing his thing. So I love producers like that, that keep their ear to the street and are able to stay current with what's going on today.
The first time you had your heart broke.
Oh, man. You know what? It was probably okay, I'm trying to see. I had a crush on this girl named Kira Bryant back in maybe fourth grade, third grade, but I don't remember if she broke my heart. My first serious heartbreak, my first serious heartbreak, man, was probably I was going to a girl, man, named Jamie Gaston back in like ninth grade or something. And when me and her broke up, it was, you know, I think that may have been like my first real, you know, my first real heartbreak. Yeah, Jamie. That's my homegirl, man.
The reason I ask is your writing has a certain optimism about love that only can come from the loss, if that makes sense.
Sure. And you know what? You know, anybody that I work with, because I don't do a whole bunch of the actual writing lyric wise. Mm-hmm. But what I try to convey in the feeling of the music is optimism about love, but also, you know, conveying just the totality of it, you know, because there's everything, you know, wrapped up inside of love. So, that's an interesting perspective, man. That's a really great question.
Yeah, love is a beautifully ugly piece of shit.
It is. It can be. I won't say it is, but it can be.
Even when it works, it's ugly as fuck sometimes.
It's that. Yeah, it's that.
Yo, what high school did you go to?
I went to Henry Ford.
Come on, bro. So did I. 89. Henry Ford. I graduated in 89.
Trojan, little Brown and, you know, Brown and Gold all day, man.
Yeah, man. Are you listening, man? So did I.
I look. Oh, I hear you. Trojan.
Oh, come on, man. God.
We out here. Trojan, we out here.
Yo, that is fucking dope. What year? What year are you graduating?
98. I came out in 98.
Oh, my God. I'm way older than you.
You have about maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, like a decade.
You came out, what, 87, 88, 89?
89.
Okay, 89. So 9 years. Yeah, I think when did my brother come out? No, he came out a little after that. He went to McKenzie.
Oh, was Chicken Wing still the
Miss Dr. Porter, man. Yeah. Dr. Porter. And yeah. I think we lost Dr. Porter recently, man, within like the last year or so.
Yeah, your man was stealing from the school too, though.
Yeah, I heard he was embezzling money. I did hear about that.
I'm not surprised though.
No, I heard about it, man. Yeah, I heard about it. But yeah, no, Dr. Porter was cool, man. But yeah, he was still the principal when I it was him who helped me graduate, man, because I failed band and a couple other classes my senior year. I failed band. Crazy, right? and they weren't gonna let me graduate, man. And Dr. Porter was like, look, he's done enough. Just let him go.
I'm sorry, man. So my phone just turned on.
Good,
yo, the Love Factor.
The Love Factor, the 2 albums ago.
Is that a perfect album for you?
Nah. I mean, I don't know about perfect. I listened back to it. I recorded that album in 2018 and 2019, released it in 2019. And I don't know if I would say it's perfect, but when I listen to it, which is rare, but I do go back to reference things and I don't hear anything that I would change about it. So I guess it would be perfect in my eyes. I don't really hear anything I would change.
It's a beautiful album, bro.
Thank you, man.
It really is a beautiful album.
Thank you, man.
And I got to shout out my manager because she put me up on you.
Okay.
I started going down a rabbit hole and it was the same thing with Dilla for me.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know how great Dilla was.
Oh, man. He was. Yeah. He's one of the best ever. Literally one of the best ever.
What's a good Dilla story?
I can't tell some of them stories.
you done told old girl whole government name, but you can't, tell it.
I can't tell some of them stories, man.
I'm not mad at that.
Some of them stories I cannot tell, but I will tell this one. I tell this one often. I'll never forget, man. We were building Dilla's studio at his house in Clinton Township. Mm. And this is probably 2002. Maybe 2001, 2002. He had just got to deal with MCA.
Okay.
He came to Guitar Center and he brought this $100,000 check and talked to me and my man Johnny and said, hey, man, this is, you know, I need y'all to give me everything that I need, you know, for the new studio at the house. So while we were constructing his studio, he used to give me beat CDs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we would get to Dilla's house probably at, about 7 or 8 in the morning. And we would leave probably around 6 or 7 in the evening. So we would work, you know, maybe, you know, close to 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And Dilla, we will be working when we got there and he will be working when we left. And, you know, like I said, we would leave at 7 p.m. When we would get back at 7 a.m. the next day, Dilla would still be in the basement. It was the craziest thing that he was still working. Mm. You know, after everybody went to sleep, I don't know if he went to sleep or not. I mean, I'm sure he did at some point. But But that's all leading into the story. So we used to go upstairs, and Dilla had this drawer where he used to keep his blunts. Mm-hmm. You know, Dilla smoked weed, you know, all the time. And I wasn't like a weed smoker back then, but I wanted to be cool because I'm hanging around Dilla. So if he's smoking, then I'm going to smoke. And I'll never forget, man, he told me to go get a blunt out the drawer. You know, we smoking, and I'm guessing maybe 20 minutes or so later, I go back to the drawer and there's another blunt in its place. And they were literally like in this drawer, you know, single file. And his refrigerator was like the same way. Like I would go get a Coke, or he used to keep Pellegrino in the refrigerator. And if you take one, literally 10 minutes later, there was another one in this place turned. You know, they were all turned the same way. Mm. You know, Pepsi's, you know, Sprite, everything literally turned the same way, man. It was crazy. You know, but if you listen to Dilla's music, like his music was the same way. It was, you know, it was exactly like that. Like everything was so calculated. And not only calculated, everything was very intentional. And, you know, that's the one thing that I took away from, you know, from studying up under Dilla was, you know, whatever you're doing, you know, especially musically, you know, just be intentional with what you're doing. So but yeah, that's a crazy / funny Dilla story.
So when they study your music 50, 100 years, mm-hmm. what do you want them to get from your style?
Oh, man, that's a heavy question. The same thing. I guess it would be passing the lesson on of intentionality. Intentionality and integrity in the music. That's what I'm really about, you know, is just making sure that the music sounds as good as it can, feels as good as it can, which is my thing. I'm a feeling guy. But yeah, just have integrity and be intentional with music.
How important is it to be in the studio with the artists you're working with?
That's what I absolutely enjoy. And it doesn't happen a lot these days. Like I come from the era where, you know, we were actually in the studio with the artists. You know, when I was working with Alchemist and I would be in the studio with Dre and we were working with Pharoah Monch and Anita, like we would actually be in the room. And of course, you know how things are, you know, people can just send stuff on WeTransfer or Dropbox and do that. And not that you can't create great records that way, because most of my records have been made like that. You know, I'll send my stuff over to my partner, Simon, in mm-hmm. Germany, and he'll do his thing. And, you know, but some people I feel need to be produced. So mm-hmm. I really like to be in the studio, you know, with these people, producing them, you know, and just feeling the energy, you know, of the artist. I think it's still super important to be in the studio with the artist and actually produce records, you know, together. Or actually write songs together instead of, you know, okay, I'll do 3 or 4 tracks and send them to you and then you write to them. Let's just do it all together, because now we can bounce ideas off of each other. You know, just the energy in the room. I think all of that stuff is still really important.
Best chemistry you have with somebody in music.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, sometimes the chemistry is not there, but, you know, but you at least figure out if you have chemistry with somebody if you're with them.
Okay, but what's... Who would you say you have the best chemistry with?
Me and Alex Isley have made great records together, and we've never been in the same room together, but Alex just understands. She understands me musically and I understand her. Mm-hmm. You know, we're both cut, you know, from the same cloth. You know, of course, her dad is Ernie Isley from the Isley Brothers, and her uncle was Ron. You know, my music is, you know, influenced by them. And me and Alex Isley have made some really, really great records together. And then me and Joe Pere, mm-hmm. Who's actually here in the city. And Brian McKnight Jr. is one of my absolute favorites to work with. Man. Me and him got great musical chemistry.
I had the honor of interviewing him, too.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Great. Very, very interesting interview.
Okay.
You guys remind me of each other.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian's super, like, he's super intelligent, man. Yeah. He's highly intelligent.
He can sing, very smart too.
Oh my God. He's an amazing singer. He's better than what most people even understand. Like, people heard him on the Lover Suite. You know, some people reached back out to me because when we did In Love on the Love Factor, you mm-hmm. know, some people liked it, some people didn't. But I'll never forget, man, a couple people reached out to me on this new album, they was like, we had no idea Brian Jr. could sing like that. And I said, you know, but this is why I work with him, because he's incredible, you know.
And, you know, but we talked about like, his name,
too. You know, I got to give it up to him. And I'm like, yeah, you do.
We talked about his name, too. And, mm-hmm. and for me, I think that prevents a lot of his success.
It could. Yeah, it could, you know, given who his dad is, you know, it's Brian McKnight.
Yeah.
You know, and Brian McKnight is Brian McKnight. And then you hear Junior, you know, and you got other people like that, you know, in the industry, you know, who have at least the last name, you know, we got, you know, Nat Cole, Natalie Cole.
Yeah.
You know, Natalie had some great success. But yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be preventing him, you know, a little bit. Yeah. But Brian, you know, Brian's star is really rising, man. I'm loving, you know, seeing everything that he's doing. And Brian's pen, oh my God. Yeah, like Brian can do anything, man. He can write anything. R&B records, pop records, country records, rock records. Like Brian, he's a genius, man. Real talk.
Is there a genre you haven't tackled yet that you're looking forward to?
No. No, I've done everything, man. I've done pop records. I've done R&B records, of course. I've done jazz records. I've done contemporary and smooth jazz records. I've done rock and roll records. I've done heavy metal records. I produced this heavy metal band back in maybe 2002 or three.
Really?
You know, but that's not where my passion is, but I was asked to do it, you know, and I think I did a good job with it. You know, of course, hip hop, rap. I've literally done everything, man. You can hear all of the influence, you know, in my music.
What was Jonathan Butler like? I used to listen to that cat back in the day, religiously.
Jonathan was cool, man. He was a little funny acting, but not really personality wise. I'll never forget when I went to shake his hand, and Jonathan is left handed,
mm-hmm.
So he plays his guitar this way, and I can't remember if I went to shake his hand with my right hand, and he wouldn't shake my hand. Like it was weird, man. you know, but he was just trying to protect his hand, you know, yeah. And it was literally right before a show. But yeah, no, personality wise, just in general, Johnson's cool.
Studio or the stage?
Ooh. These days, after being on stages since I was 12, I'm going to go with studio.
You performed for Farrakhan.
I did.
What was that like?
It was great, man. Minister Farrakhan is probably one of the greatest people that I know. I'll never forget, man, when he told me he was a fan of mine when I played for Savior's Day. I played for Savior's Day back in maybe 2011,
mm-hmm.
2010, 2012. I actually did it a couple of times, but I played at his restaurant in Chicago and I was performing. I played piano for Raheem Devon, Wyclef. And somebody else, but no, performing for the minister was really cool.
Yeah, I'm going to Savior's Day next year. I've been once before.
Okay, yeah.
Phenomenal experience.
It is. Yeah, I haven't been to Savior's Day maybe in about 5 or 6 years, but I plan on going this coming year.
Yeah, I bought my tickets last week.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice. Stevie Wonder.
Stevie.
What? Tell me about that experience.
I was in the Stevie, in the studio with Stevie back in 2001 or two. And me and him recorded a jazz standard together called Our Love Is Here to Stay. And he told me to never put it out. I'm honored, Stevie, and I'm never going to put it out. But some people have heard it. My girl Toya, she's heard it. My man Ronnie, he's heard it. I was actually looking for it because I lost it on a hard drive, you know, some years ago. And I don't remember if I said something about it online, but, you know, my girl Toya, she reached out to me. She was like, oh, I got that in my email. So she sent it to me about a year ago.
Mm.
So I have it again. But, yeah, I'll never forget, man. Stevie was asleep in his daughter's basement, and we were actually building the studio in his daughter's basement in Oak Park, I think. I think we were in Oak Park,
mm-hmm.
and we walked downstairs and Stevie, my best friend, Johnny, the craziest thing was Stevie was asleep upstairs. Me and Johnny were downstairs. And when Stevie came downstairs, he literally called out Johnny's name and hadn't seen us yet and didn't know we were there. Like, it was the craziest thing. So I don't know if he smelled them. It was, you know, but I know senses are, you know, are heightened when you're blind, or I'm assuming that. That's what the studies show. But yeah, that was crazy. But no, working with Stevie just that one time was really cool, man.
Yeah, I'm not going to say who, but somebody told me that he lying, he can see.
I mean, he may be able to see, man. You know, I know a lot of people, they say, you know, can see like outlines of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of thing. So I don't know, you know, if he's like blind in totality, but yeah, I'm not sure. But, you know, what I do know is that he's made some of the most incredible music ever. And he's one of the silliest guys I've ever met, man. Yeah, Stevie, he's a goofball, man.
Okay, I give you a blank check. You can make an album with anybody you want. Who you got? I'll give you three writers, three other producers, and three artists.
Ooh. Okay. Blank check. I can get in the studio with three writers, three producers, three artists. Okay. The three writers that I'm going to go with would be Babyface, Harold Lilly Jr., and, oh man, it's a tough one, and probably Jonte Austin.
That dude's ridiculous.
Yeah, Jonte. Those are my three writers.
Okay.
I don't know if this is one or two, but I'm going in with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
That's one.
Okay, that's one. As a team, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, I'm going in with Quincy.
Okay.
And I'm going in with Gino Vannelli.
I'm not familiar with him.
You know his music when you hear it.
Okay.
Yeah, look him up. You know his music.
Okay.
And then three artists. There's nobody on the planet that like have name that I would really want to work with that I haven't already. Yeah, that's a tough one because it's not a whole bunch of people. Like, most of the people,
they don't have to be living, bro.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I'm gonna give you one on that.
You know what? Barry White.
Oh.
I'm going Barry White. Barry White. I'm going Marvin.
Oh.
Because, you know, it's Marvin.
How can you not?
And I'm going Tina Turner.
Interesting.
Tina Turner. She could do anything. She could do anything. And I would love to take Tina in a different direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, in a different direction. Tina Turner was incredible, man. Like, people don't even really understand how dope she really was. But I remember when I first heard Private Dancer when I was 4 years old. You know, my mom had that tape, and I begged my mother. I'm like, no, you have to buy me this tape. And she got me my own copy of that tape, and I listened to Private Dancer on repeat all the time. And that, and it was a song on there called 1984. And if I need to throw in one other person. Madonna.
Really?
Madonna. Yeah, Madonna. I like Madonna. Yeah. Like Madonna. I like Madonna. Look, her early records.
But she, I guess vocally, she wasn't. She made hits, though. I'll give her that.
She made hits. She's a great songwriter herself. She also had, you know, people around her that were writing and, you know, entertainment. You know, she was dope, but she had enough vocally going on where she could get the job done. And I personally think that I will be able to pull more out of her than what she's already done.
I would like to see you with Tina Marie.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not a huge Tina Marie fan. And my second mother, she would hate that I say that.
I'm a little tight about that. I'm not gonna lie,
yeah,
bro.
I've told her I'm just not a huge Tina Marie fan, man. Like, I like Tina and I respect what she does. But I'm just not a huge fan of her music. Like, I never put her music on to just like listen to and chill. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you. I yeah. feel you.
Yeah, but I absolutely respect Tina, you know, as a vocalist and what she does. And she was a really great songwriter.
Okay.
Yeah, great writer.
I meant to ask you this, and I don't know, I think Rocky's Reality reminded me. Why didn't Stevie want you to release that song?
Because he had just woken up and he said that he wasn't in the best shape vocally. Because I don't remember how long it was from the time he came, you know, from upstairs to the studio down. Mm-hmm. And when we actually recorded it, but he just said that he didn't like the way he sounded and he didn't want me to release it. So I told him, I said, okay, you know, I won't. But like I said, there have been people that have heard it. But yeah, he said not to release it. And, you know, and I don't think I will.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you're getting ready to record 4 albums in a week.
I am.
Why?
Huge undertaking. I have a lot to say musically, for one. I want to take a break. That's the second reason. So let me see. Yeah, I want to take a break. I want to focus on some outside projects, and people have asked me to produce some records. So if I get all of my stuff done, like, I don't like to work on my stuff and then work on other people's stuff at the same time. When I'm focused on my records, you know, I'm just super locked in on my records. So if I get all of this music done, then I'm able to focus on, you know, some other people's stuff. But yeah, I just have a lot to say musically, man. I got some really interesting concepts for these records, and me and my team, me and Matt, Rufus, you know, Tony, you know, whoever else I call in, Quentin, you know, we all going in next week and we're going to knock this stuff down, man. We, you know, I'm writing charts, Matt's writing charts, Rufus is in LA writing charts, and we're going to go in, read this stuff down and literally lay the beds, you know, for all of the music, you know, and then, you know, of course we'll call in, you know, vocalists, mm-hmm. and that'll come, you know, maybe the next 6 months or so. But I'm hoping that within the next 6 months, each album will be like totally done.
Okay. And do you have like a construction formula that you use?
I don't. Yeah, okay. I don't. Yeah, you know, music just kind of starts where it starts. If it starts sitting right here, if it starts in the bathroom or outside and I put it together, you know, however I put it together, it could start with drums. It could start with this, you know, with guitar. I don't have any set thing, you know, that I start with and construct from. Favorite song that I've done, mm-hmm. The Lover Suite. This new one. Yeah, this new one, 29 minutes and 12 seconds of absolute beauty, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, because it's mine, but I'm a fan of everybody who's on that record. Matt Cusine, Brian Jr., Joe, Robert Glasper, Taylor Eichstein, you know, my man Sasha is on guitar. Jarius is doing some background vocals. It's, you know, to me, it's perfect. Yeah, that's my favorite, The Lover Suite.
Worst song you've done? You got no shit that you listen to and you just like, oh, that's cringe. How do I make this?
Like on my actual albums.
Mm-hmm. No. Not on your albums, because if you thought it was cringe.
Just in general. I have no idea. Something on this hard drive is terrible. You know, it's nothing in recent years. Like, it may be something that I did 10 years ago that I'm just not, you know, I wasn't feeling, you know. But I've grown to a point where, like, personally, I don't think that I can make a bad song. I think once you reach a certain level, you know, that's like saying that Quincy Jones can make a bad song or Stevie can make a bad song. It may not be to your liking or your taste, but I don't think that Quincy Jones can produce a bad song.
Okay.
You know what I mean? He's reached a level. It's like, it's not going to be bad. It just may not, you may not be feeling it. Stevie Wonder cannot write a bad song. Like, he's, you know, it just may not be your thing. You know, George Clinton, I just feel like when you reach a certain point, you can't do anything bad. I don't know. That's just kind of how I feel.
But at what point did you get in your pocket then?
I think I really, really, really jumped in my bag probably back in 2012, 2013, when I was in Africa. Mm-hmm. I was in Africa working with Jay Electronica, and I think at that point is when I, you know, when I kind of made a decision to like focus on the producer side. Mm-hmm. I had already been doing some productions and working with some people, and, you know, I had done stuff, you know, working with Elm and, you know, and all of these different people. But I think I jumped in my bag when I decided to do my own thing and make my own records.
Okay. And you say you work with Elm?
Yeah, I worked with Elm back in maybe 2001, 2002, 2003, something like that. We worked together for some years.
Okay. What's he like?
Elm was cool. Quiet, calculated. He was very, very cool. He was cool to hang out with. We only got to hang out like outside of the studio a couple times. We were at Maryland's on Monroe. Actually the first time I met him, and M got me so drunk. Oh my God, it was terrible. It was terrible, man. So this is how this story goes. So my man Denine Porter, I was working at Guitar Center at the time, and my man Denine, I think I may have been on my lunch break or something. So I'm sitting in the keyboard room, you know, doing my thing. So Denine walks in, and he's like, "Hey man, you know, you dope. You know, you want to come play some keys on some stuff?" And I knew who he was because I was a fan of D12. Mm-hmm. You know, and I knew Proof at that point because I used to see Proof at the hip hop shop up on 7 Mile. So I knew who Denine was. And I can't remember how long after we met. It may have been that night or within like a couple of days. He said, "You know, I want you to meet Eminem. We're working on whatever record this was." This may have been the second album at this point. Mm. And we met at Maryland's on Monroe, and, you know, Elm, and to show how green and naive I was at the time, he said, and I think I was probably 21, so I just started drinking. Mm-hmm. And Elm, he said, "You know, just go to the bar and just tell them to put it on my tab." And I didn't know what a tab was. You know, I said, you know, and I probably asked him something like, "What you talking about? You know, I don't know." He said, "Just tell them it's on me." And I said, "Okay, cool." So at the time, I was drinking this beer, man. I don't know how it tastes now. It's a drink, beer called Honey Brown.
Oh, Honey Brown used to be the shit.
Right? Honey Brown was it. You know, especially like early 2000s, Honey Brown was it.
That was it.
Yes. You know, that was the move. So I was drinking Honey Brown, you know, real heavy at the time. So they had Honey Brown there. And I think I probably had, you know, and again, this is me at 21 years old, hanging out with M and Denine Porter. And I'm like, "Oh, it's all on him." Yeah. I'm about to go for it. I'm going for it. So, you know, I got a Honey Brown. Get up, go get another Honey Brown. Get up, go get another Honey Brown. And I'm like, "Okay, let me switch it on over." Got a couple Long Islands.
Oh, a couple?
A couple Long Islands. Oh. You know, top shelf.
Oh.
And then me and my mom, when I would drink with her, like her drink was Fuzzy Navel at the time. So I'm like, "All right, man, let me switch it up again." I would go and get this Fuzzy Navel, and let me get me another one. And then, okay, let me switch it back. Let me get me another Long Island, and I'm closing out with Honey Browns. Dude, I was so messed up. So I'll never forget, man. We all walked outside. Elm got in some like black truck or something, and me and Denine were standing in the parking lot, and he looked at me. He was like, "Man, you good?" I said, "Yeah, I'm cool." So I got in my Ford Escort GT that I got from Mail Fire. So you already know. You already know what time it is.
That nigga, Nick, he should have flew and picked you up, because I know you was done. Hey, man. Dude.
Yeah, you know the Mail Fire, you know the Mail Fire cars with the joint, you know, because they cut your joint off if you don't make your $87 payment.
Oh my God!
They will shut your car off. They shut my car off a number of times back then, where I ended up stranded somewhere and had I literally walked to Mail Fire to make payments, man. Look, Mail Fire was terrible. But if you just made your payments, you was fine. You was all right. But anyway, man, so dig this. So Denine asked me, he was like, "Man, you good?" I said, "Yeah, I'm straight." So I jump on the Lodge Freeway, because I was living in Oak Park at the time, jump on the Lodge Freeway, And I'm like, okay, I messed up. So I let the windows down, and, you know, oh, and I had a sunroof because, you know, this is GT. So the back is the hatch. So I let the windows down. I opened the sunroof. I don't remember how I got home, but what I do know, I was living in Oak Park in a duplex, and we used to go in the back door. So you would pull in between the houses and park your car in the back. My mother, so when you, the door at the back, you would go up a step into the kitchen, like into the house.
Right.
And then if you open the door and go down, you were right at the basement. So there was a landing right here.
Right.
My mother woke me up at 7:30 in the morning on the landing. Look, door in the back,
wide open.
I didn't make it down to my room. I didn't make it upstairs. I was literally passed out on the landing, man. It was wild. Look, so I stopped drinking for about a year or two after that. I blame Eminem still. I blame Eminem still for me, you know, for that happening. I mean, because, you know, it was all on his staff. But, you know, I got a little more self-control these days, and I know how to drink.
Yo, yeah, we've all been there, bro.
Oh yeah, oh no, we've all, if you was drinking, how it is at 21, 22, and if somebody just tell you, oh, hey man, that's all on me. Oh, okay, cool.
I lost my car literally one time. I'm drinking Tanqueray.
Oh,
with my cousins. I have not drank Tanqueray since this night.
I believe it.
With my cousin and our boys, we go up to Northland. We like three cars deep. We was goony back then too. We go in. I ran into the wall at Northland for no apparent reason. Just ran into the wall and parked my car. Like, didn't shit happen. Go in, and I don't know, like 30 minutes after I'm in there, it dawns on me, damn, I just fucked my car up.
Yikes.
I remember going back to my car, and then in the next morning. Apparently, I had called my wife at the time from some random ass store like 2 miles away. She came and picked me up. The next morning, I'm like, can you take me to my car? We drive, and I'm like, where you going? To your car. You don't know where your car's at? No, it was in the parking lot of this store.
Word.
Bruh, I ain't drank Tanqueray since.
Word. Yeah, you don't need to drink no more Tanqueray.
Ever. Like,
ever. Ever.
God was on my side that night.
No, for real, man. Look, and I've had a few nights like that, man, where, you know, you just don't know how to hold it. You know?
Man. Yeah,
I've had a few of them nights, man, but that was easily my worst night like that.
Oh, okay, yeah, but yeah, was, but it was M though, bro. I think most of us would have.
Hey man, it's M's fault. I blame M now.
I'm gonna blame him too. Yo, how did you get into the TV commercials?
A partner of mine, man, that I've been knowing probably 25 years now, reached out to me back in 2007. He works at an advertising agency, and he reached out and said, hey, you know, I need some music. And I worked on an album for him because he's an artist as well.
Mm-hmm.
And worked on an album for him and his crew at the time. And, you know, he said that he needed some music for, I believe at the time it may have been AT&T. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my first commercial was AT&T in 2007. So, and I've been literally working with him since 2007. So I think this year I've done maybe 15 spots.
You serious?
You know, between like TV and then when you're scrolling on Instagram or, you know, or an ad pops up on YouTube. Like, I do music for a lot of that stuff. So that 15 second, you know, thing that comes on YouTube before your thing comes on, or while you're scrolling on Instagram, you see that little 6 second, you know, the little 6 second spot. And then, of course, you know, and then, of course, you got, you know, the 30 second spots for TV. But I think I've probably done 15 or 20 this year.
You have mastered the art of the bag.
I know how to get money. My mom and dad taught me how to get money. Like, I'll never at this point be broke ever again.
That is a beautiful thing right there. I'll
never be broke. You know, and I'm not where I want to be, but I'll never be broke. You know, I'll never be broke.
You got kids? You married?
I'm comfortably situated.
I've never heard it put that way before.
Yeah, I'm comfortably situated. And I have I have two sons, my guys.
That's I'm comfortably situated. I'm gonna have comfortably to use situated. That. Yeah, I'm about to use that, bro.
Yeah, comfortably situated.
I'm still in your shit.
Yeah, I'm gonna take that. I'm comfortably situated. You know, people, however they want to take that. I'm comfortably situated.
Would you consider yourself neo soul?
Absolutely not. My music is, I would just say it's soul music. You know, the neo thing, like I wouldn't necessarily put myself in the bag with Erica and the people who were that on one of my other phones. I wouldn't put myself in the bag with, you know, Erica and music and the early stuff that was going on with Jill. Like I did that music, mm-hmm. You know, back when the neo soul thing was like really, really popping. But I would just say it's soul and R&B music, you know, with like jazz influences.
Okay.
Yeah.
How dope is Jill live?
Jill is very, very dope live. I actually prefer her live.
I seen the one clip and I prefer her live too.
Yeah, I prefer Jill Scott live. She's really dope live.
Your best performance. Your most I won't say best, but your most enjoyable performance.
Oh man, that's crazy. Over the last 25 years, I would say that one of them was probably when I closed out the Java and Jazz series with my new band at Detroit Public Library this past summer. That was last summer. We absolutely murdered the stage. So that's probably one of my best shows ever. And then a couple times I've been down to Dallas, Capitol Jazz was good. I've had a lot of performances that I think, you know, that were memorable for me. But yeah, probably one of my best would be the Jive and Jazz performance.
I know you did. You have to have done Hart Plaza, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I played there a number of times. Yeah, I played there for the Jazz Fest a couple years ago. But yeah, if it's somewhere to play in and around the city of Detroit, I've played there, I'm sure.
Yo, have you done the All Ford reunion?
I have not. I have not. Like every time they do it, I'm always working because I'm usually booked pretty far out. You know, and I know they do, yeah, you know, the all years thing, but I'm always working. Yeah. Like I didn't get to the one, what was it? How long have I been out of school? 25 years. I think it was 25 years this year. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't able to go because I was already working and couldn't take off. And, I didn't even go to the class reunion. The class reunion, was it 10 years? They actually all came to me. Yeah, they all came to me when I was performing at Lola's, and that was a good time.
I've never been to one of my. I didn't give a shit. Like I loved high school. I just don't love them niggas now.
Yeah, and I'm not mad at that. I didn't have a whole bunch of friends in high school. I had a couple. You know, and I enjoy seeing people from high school when I keep in touch, you know, with people on Facebook. But I think the way that the world works now with Facebook and Instagram and all that, we see each other so often online.
It's enough.
I'm cool with that. Yeah. You know, other than like your people, you know, if you got like your best friend from high school, you know what I mean? Or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm cool seeing people, you know, online.
Yeah. And let me take that back because Nick's been. It's not that I don't love people. What he just said. But I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
Like it's not like I don't feel it's necessary.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I don't feel it's necessary.
And then it's gotta be difficult to trust people's motives after you've been so successful.
Yeah. You know, and I don't really think about that a whole lot, but I guess because I tend to stay to myself. Mm-hmm. And I got, you know, my small circle of people who I call my friends. You know, and if I see people out, but I don't really let too many people like in my circle. You know, but yeah, I'm not really a person at these days, I guess, because my job is to be out. If I'm not in the studio, my job is to be out. So mm-hmm. I don't really like to be out like that.
Robert Glasper, what's he like?
My guy.
He seems to be like the world knows him, but doesn't know him.
Yeah, you know, and it's crazy, man, that as many people know him, there are still many who don't. And it's weird to say this because now I believe Rob is a 5-time Grammy Award winner. And I think he was just nominated for another 2. So, you know, he'll probably win. But it's crazy that his star even is still rising. You know, it's weird to say that. You know, but like people in music know, but then some people just, they just don't know who he is. You know, but I'm really glad or really happy for him and the moves that he's making, you know, with the soundtracks. I know he just finished up the thing for Luther Vandross. He just finished up doing, you know, the soundtrack, or he scored the documentary for Luther. And, you know, he's doing TV shows here. He's got his records, you know. And I don't expect everybody to know, you know, to know who he is or who I am or, mm-hmm. you know. You know, once you reach a certain level, then of course people know who you are once you Beyonce, or, you know, like that level. But yeah, Rob, no, he's a great guy, man. He's probably the funniest dude I know. Yeah, he's a comedian, man, for real.
Did you say a Luther documentary?
Luther documentary will be premiere at Sundance Film Festival, I believe, in the spring, and Glasper scored the music for it.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of Luther, me and Glasper did a conversation on here about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I asked him about that. Asked if he had a chance to kick it with Marcus Miller. Marcus mm-hmm. is another, you know, another cat, man. You know, Marcus, you know, doing films and bass, and I was able to work with Marcus on my second album. He's on the Love Factor. Yeah, but Marcus is the guy, you know, like all of the stuff, you know, that people love from Luther, man. Marcus is playing bass and producing all of those records. Him and Nat Adderley Jr.
Yo, I'd like to steal your phone for about 2 minutes.
Oh man, I know, right?
Like your shit's got to be crazy, bro.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, and it's crazy because I look at other people's phones. Like I would love to look at Glasper's phone.
Oh yeah, his shit is probably you know what I mean. You know whose phone I would love to fuck the comedian. Oh, why can I not remember this nigga name? Dave Chappelle.
Chappelle, yeah. Yeah.
Like Dave Chappelle's phone is gotta his phone, be.
Yeah. Oh, no, his phone, Quincy's phone. You know, Quincy, just give me your phone for about 10 minutes. And I just want to do this. I don't want to take nobody's number. Just let me just kind of just do like that.
You know who probably had the biggest contact list in the history of entertainment?
Who you thinking?
Clarence Avant.
Oh my God. He's more than Quincy.
Yeah. Clarence. Like beyond. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's probably never going to be duplicated.
No. His phone had all the numbers.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Clarence could call anybody.
That dude was.
No. Yeah. The Godfather, man, he could call anybody. You know, and everybody, you know, reveres Clarence Avant, man. He's the guy that made a lot of the stuff move.
Is there a Clarence Avant for this generation?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think anybody is in the industry that has that much power and that much reach mm-hmm. that's able to make stuff move the way that Clarence made stuff move. Like he, you know, all the politicians, musicians, athletes, like everybody knew who Clarence was.
That's some crazy shit.
Yeah,
you're right, Rita. Clive Davis is his bag is pretty deep too.
Oh no, Clive is Clive, Quincy, like all them dudes. I'm sure they phones is, you know, but not like Clarence.
Do you still get nervous calling somebody?
No.
I get nervous, man.
No, I don't get nervous. I can't remember the last time I was like nervous to like talk to somebody or walk up to somebody and say hi. You know, I guess just because I've met so many people now, you know, and have been, you know, at the parties and this and that, and you know, people are just people. So
I still get nervous.
I was telling my story today about, you know, how I met Teddy Riley, and I was terrified to go talk to him, man. You know, and now I can call Teddy on the phone and, you know, this is my guy. But, you know, but 10 years ago, terrified to talk to Teddy. But yeah, I can't remember the last time I was like nervous to like talk to somebody.
Yo, man. Yeah, so before the show, Rita hits me up. It's like, you got to ask good questions.
Hey man, yo, you got good questions.
Shit made me nervous as fuck. Scared. Like I don't get nervous all that often anymore. You know,
that's funny, man.
But like, yeah. He said you got to ask some good questions. I'm like, damn, I don't ask good questions. Like, you do.
But
right. That's exactly what she said. I got an ego too. Like, shit.
Yeah, you do, but this one I need you to ask a really good
question. Right. I'm like, oh fuck. I don't think I got real good questions then.
You've asked better questions than most.
You've asked better questions than most.
You know, most interviews typically, you know, I'm giving the same answers to the same questions. But it's been some in here that's like, oh, okay. And actually, the majority of the questions that you ask have been on the other side of the same.
I hate that shit. Like, I look at other interviews that people do, and I try not to as much now because it kind of makes me not ask certain questions. Yeah. When sometimes it's not the question they asked, it's the question they didn't ask about the question they asked.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
that's why I try to make sure I still, you know, check the interviews out, because, you know, some shit you leave on the table and I leave shit on the table. That's why I don't like listening to my interviews afterward. I never do.
No, I hear it. I mean, that's like me with my music. Like, I don't listen to my music after I put it out. It's not for me. Like, this is not for us. You know, like I'll never watch this interview. I'll post it. I'll never watch it. You know, this is for the people who aren't here. You know what I mean?
Well, I hope I've done a good enough job so that people who aren't familiar want to get more familiar.
Yeah, no, that's really what it's about, man. That's, you know, that should be the mission for everybody who, you know, who has any type of podcast or radio show or whatever. You know, that's a great goal to have. I think personally that you've done it.
All right. I'll take that.
You know,
that's all that counts.
Like, these were amazing questions, man. Real talk.
I'll talk. There you go, Rita. Amazing questions. You hear that?
Rita, amazing question. Amazing question.
All right, one more.
Yeah.
As far as marketing your album now, more important, podcast or the radio?
Podcast. Yeah, podcast. I mean, radio is still what it is, but radio is, you know, I mean, radio is only going to do what radio is going to do, which is not much. They're going to play the same 12 songs that you hear, you know, over and over again. You know, but podcast, you know, I mean, and it depends on the reach, but I like podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm biased, but I do too.
Yeah. No, I like podcasts.
And I was talking to somebody, you know, and they were saying that they spent like $100,000 on the radio.
Oh no. It's easy to do on a campaign for radio.
I'm thinking to myself, that don't make sense nowadays.
Yeah, I personally don't think so, because I don't think the return on investment will be that much.
Nothing.
It doesn't make sense. The return on investment is not, it's not there to spend that much on a radio campaign. Like, you know, to spend $1,000 or $2,000 or, you know, five, maybe 10.
Yeah.
You know, on a radio campaign. Okay, cool. But $100,000? Absolutely not.
And outside of the Breakfast Club, like, the Breakfast Club is national. Right. Like, big national. Way bigger than everybody else. And I fucks with the other ones too. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, but as far as
Dale Hughley, Steve Harvey,
yeah,
you know, they cool. You know, the iHeart Radio thing, sure. Yeah.
But as far as like, if you want to get on the radio and get seen, you know, it's hard to beat the Breakfast Club.
It is. No, it is. No, Breakfast Club is, you know, I mean, it's the Breakfast Club.
Okay, so besides the four albums you got coming next year, what else should we be on the lookout for? People want to get in touch with you. How they go about doing that?
So getting in touch, everything is B Williams Music. My website, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or X, or whatever it is now, Threads, you know, Spill, all of that social media stuff is all B Williams Music. And then what do I have coming up? So really just these four records, man. This is the big thing right now. And I'm actually getting ready to leave to go to Dubai. Actually, I'll be in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and a couple other cities. So I'm going to the United Arab Emirates doing a tour in February. Second week in February, I think I'll be gone for 10 or 11 days. And I'll be teaching in some colleges there and doing a short tour.
That's crazy right there.
Yeah. Bro. Yeah.
If you ever need an old fat nigga with absolutely no talent, hit me up. I got you.
You need me to carry your bag? I got you.
I probably can't do that, man. It's a little tiring now. You know.
You can roll the bag.
I can push the little thing to it from the hotel. I got you.
Okay. You funny.
But on a serious note, I'm not sure if I can ever do anything for you. But if you ever need anything, bro, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, and I got you.
Absolutely, man. Look, I appreciate you having me on, man. This has been a real good time. And again, I really appreciate the questions, man. They were very, very thoughtful and thought-provoking. Like, you actually made me think. And typically, you know, interviews, I don't have to think because I've answered the same questions over and over and over again. So I just, you know. Yeah. But you actually made me say, you know, hold on, wait, let me think about this one.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to clip that and send that to Rita. We try to tell your ass.
Look, I'm sure she's watching.
Oh, she is.
Yeah, I'm sure she is watching. Yeah, I'm sure she's in the room somewhere. That's my homegirl, man. She's good people.
My shit has picked up so much in the last few months just by having her as a manager. Like, so.
Yeah. That's good, man. That's good. But congratulations on everything, man. You know, and wishing you much success, you know, with this and just life in general, man. Yeah, wishing you the best.
Yo, tell Teddy, come through. I got you, bro.
Look, I will. I'll absolutely hit him up.
I think he'd be lying, man. Everybody say that shit. Then I can't get in touch with Jazz after the show.
Anyway, I'll hit Teddy up, man.
I appreciate you, bro.
And Teddy may do it. You know, he may do it. I'll reach out to him and ask him.
Oh man, I probably would cry a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that. Hey man, grown men cry too. Look, and it's all right.
Yeah, I'll be crying in Guy.
playing Teddy's jam and crying.
Man, all right, man. I'm gonna let you get out of here, man. I truly, truly, truly appreciate your time. Yeah, your wisdom. This was an honor, bro.
Yep. Thank you for having me, man.
Oh, no doubt, man. Anytime you want to come back, just say the word. We got you.
All right. Yeah, no doubt.
On that note, look, I'm tongue-tied. Have a good one, bro. Appreciate you again.
All right, yeah. Peace.
Yo, and of course, I am Jobs. I am your host of Intellectually Petty Radio. I ask thought-provoking questions because I'm so fucking dope. Yo, I'll be back in a good hour. I got Sierra Angelia coming on to the show. She is an actress extraordinaire. And she's, I think I counted 27 movies. I don't know. And I'm pretty sure I'm missing some shit. This was a very, very, very dope conversation, though, man. If you get a chance to check out B. Williams. On that note, I'll see y'all in a minute. I'm out. Peace.